This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
So, Javier, first time in Santa Barbara, and so really happy to have him here and delighted to be
here. Thank you for the invitation. I'm really happy to be here.
So I thought we could just start briefly just talking about a little bit about how you came to be into sound editing and sound supervising and sort of your career path.
Yeah, okay, it was kind of accidental because I was really into radio when I was very young, since I was a kid. My dream was to work in radio. And I started working in radio in Buenos Aires because I'm from Argentina. Then, when I was 21, I moved to Mexico City because just to explore a different country. And I found that radio sound design in Mexico was really good. I really like it, in special a rock radio station from Mexico City. I really love what they were doing with sound. So I made my mission to work there, and it took me like a year and a half, but I made it. And then basically is when I started like a professional like sound design career, because I learned a lot from that radio station. It was a radio station called Radioactive in Mexico City. This is at the beginning of 2002. And I learned a lot there, and I met a lot of people. And there, I met a radio DJ that he wanted to do a movie, and he proposed me to do the sound. And he was like, "Okay, let's do it." I didn't know how to do sound design for a film, but I bought some books from Amazon. And I tried to do my best. People liked it, and they started calling me to work on other films. And here I am. It was very accidental. It was not what I was thinking about doing. But once I did my first film, I was really hooked because, a soundtrack for a film, it's super complex. You have a lot of different elements like voices, sound effects, music. And so it's everything in one package. You know, you can do a lot of different stuff, and I love that. And I was really into it, and I tried to become a professional. And people noticed my work, and I started calling me for another movies.
Yeah,
and it was very organic.
So when you were starting with radio, I wonder, were there certain inspirations, radio works, or were there? Or was it music? Or because you didn't start in film, was there something that was particularly you were drawn to that wanted you?
In Argentina, when I was a kid, in radio, we had like a lot of radio plays, narrative radio plays, and I loved that a lot. Also, my father was really into a comedic group that was super famous in Argentina, like in the 70s and 80s, called Les Luthiers. And it was crazy because they did shows in a theater, and they recorded it and released it as cassettes, and you can hear it at home. But you had to have a lot of imagination, because suddenly it was like some pauses and silences, and you hear like people laughing. And you didn't know what was happening because it was like a theater play. And to me, like, that was like really, really intriguing. I really loved that. And I really loved to hear. And also, I really enjoyed only hearing, like trying to imagine what was happening there in those pauses, you know, and trying to imagine what when I hear like a radio play. I was really, really into that. I really love that in a very like visceral and instinctual way, you know, and since I was a kid. And then I went to a university to learn more from doing radio professionally. And one of my teachers really loved what I was doing, and he recommended me to work on a radio station, and I started working there professionally for a couple of years in Argentina. Then I moved to Mexico, and I did all of that.
And you've worked on several different kinds of films and also advertisements before Memoria, yes?
Yeah. Before Memoria, I worked on a lot of films. I really like to work with different directors. I'm very open to work with everybody because, you learn a lot in doing different kind of movies. I have done like straight comedies or a straight drama, and also this kind of very experimental kind of movie. I really love doing this kind of thing because it's so free. You can do, you can explore a lot of different ideas, and I have done, a lot of this kind of movies, and I really love that also.
And how did you come to Memoria?
Memoria, I come to it because I work a lot with a Mexican producer. His name is Julio Chavez Montes, and he read the script, and he really wanted to get involved in the production of the film. And he managed to do it, to make a co-production. It was a really complex production, a lot of different countries, and one of the countries was Mexico. And he talked to me about doing the sound design. So I did a sound design, and the production sound mixer was also from Mexico. And so we made like a tight team from Mexico to work during the filming in the production sound, and then in post for the sound editing.
So I think it might be helpful to tell us just a little bit about the role. I saw in the credits you were credited as sound supervisor, but we were talking backstage and you were really sound editor. It might be just helpful for folks to know what that job entails.
Basically in Mexico, with my team, we edited basically all of the movie, the sounds of the movie. I did personally the dialogue editing and the ambience to generate the reality of the film. And we have a Foley team. We recorded a lot of the props that the actors manipulate, and the footstep and everything. So basically our job was to work on the more realistic elements, trying to generate the reality of the movie, trying to make ambiences that have a lot of layers and a lot of elements. And then the director was working in Thailand with Reed. Reed is his sound designer for a lot of for a long time. So, and I talked to him, and he was like, okay, do basically all of the movie. I'm gonna work with the director in the last 15 minutes. So that's gonna be my work. You do the whole movie, I'm gonna do that. And basically that's what we did. And it was great because, the sound, the ambiences had to be like super rich, had to have a lot of density and a lot of detail, and that was a super interesting work to do.
So maybe we can talk a little bit about that, and we will get to the bang, I promise. We will get to the bang. But I'm thinking about, there's so many long takes, and so much what might be considered silence between dialogue and between other ambient sounds. And so I'm wondering how you thought about silence for this film in particular, and how that sort of shaped the various scenes.
When you are doing the sound of a movie, or or well, everything in a movie. Everything in a movie, nothing is an accident. Everything is a decision in a movie, you know. So if you have everything that you hear is there for a reason, sometimes to generate plain reality, sometimes to generate rhythm. A lot of the scenes, like on the end, for example, when they're by the creek, a lot of elements coming in and out. If the work is done well, you don't notice that. You feel it like it's natural, it's there. But there was a lot of consideration when some crickets had to sound, when you need like more pauses. So in that regard, we tried to generate like a very dense reality with a lot of different elements, so the director can choose what to focus on in different scenes. Also, like this idea of silence, like something like stale. I don't think in those terms. For me, silence is also a construction, you know. Mm-hmm. Not putting sound is a decision also. So, and in particular, the director, Api Chapong, he's really into what I call like dense silence. It you can feel that it's silent, but it has a lot of density, and sometimes has a lot of information. For example, in more like in at the end, there is a lot of nature, and perhaps for some people could be like very silent, but in fact, it has a lot of life, you know. So. Yeah, it's a way of thinking of silence in a different way, because you have to build that silence. You have to choose when you need a pause, when you need something to break the rhythm, to give more rhythm, and also the contrasts between the shots. He worked a lot on that. You can feel how this. Like a silent scene, and then you hear like the sound of the rain, for example, mm-hmm. of the sound of the city more amplified, and that gives you a lot of rhythm and a lot of rhythm for the movie. So silence is more like it's not that it's like a vacant sound. It's more like everything is there. Something like that. It's more like something that is built.
It's its own presence.
It's its own presence. Yeah. He really liked that. He even has his own silent sounds. For example, I did like a whole pass of the ambience, and then he put some very strategic sounds here and there that he really likes and that he used in all of his films. Like there are some sounds that he really like, how gives him the sense of silence, but with some presence that he enjoys that, and he used in all of his films. You have to put them.
Sounds of some of the insects.
Some insects, for example, some crickets are. Mm-hmm. He recorded them at his home in Thailand. He used the same crickets in all of his movies, but it's like another layer. So it was something like it was very, very layered, and for all of the ambiences we used the natural sound, the natural sound of the locations, the production sound mixer. He did a really great job recording a lot of stereo and surround ambiences of all of the locations, and from Bogota and from Pijao, the location, the more jungly location at the end. And we use all of those sounds to construct this very real, but with very specific rhythms, you know. I work at that.
And the Bang. So was what kind of conversations was the sound team with the director having about thinking about the Bang and
the Bang? Yeah, when I started working on the film, the Bang was there, and it has been there like for years, because this idea, he started exploring this idea about the Bang because he had this this condition that is called exploding head syndrome.
Yeah.
And so since he had that condition, he started exploring this idea in a theater play that was developed like years before the movie.
Is it The Fever Room? I think that's what it was
called.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly the name, but yeah. So when you see the scene when Tilda Swinton's character is describing the sound to the sound engineer in the studio, that's what the director did with Reed, with the sound his sound designer for that theater play. And that's the way they generated that sound. And he wanted to replicate that experience in the movie. So they teach the actor how to do all of this. So that sequence, it's all done there in camera. The actor learned how to use the software to create that sound, and that's how they did it in the first place in reality. I tried to incorporate some layers, but that sound was like, okay, this is the sound, and this has been the sound for years, so there was no touch in that sound.
I'm interested to hear you say that, because I imagine that sequence in the studio was kind of paralleling or echoing the kinds of conversations with Apichi Pong
There, there's a lot of, and he likes to show exactly what is happening in a lot of sequences, and that sequence is very documentary. The actor mm-hmm. is doing, it's using the computer and the software to create the sound in real time, and what you hear, when you hear the Bang, what you're hearing is the sound from the speakers in the location, you know, it's very documentary, and exactly the same experience that he had when he was trying to describe the sound to his sound designer.
Yes, and the bit of dialogue that the young Hernan, the sound engineer in that scene, says also seems to sort of happen repeatedly through the film, which is he makes the point that the context, how you hear the bass, and through what medium and what context, what environment changes.
The material.
So like I was wondering, and I was trying to listen very closely every time I watched it, the sound is the same, but does the volume actually change? And therefore for the audience, the loudness change? And when she's at the stream at the very end, that's the first time I started to hear the whirring, almost like a metallic whirring.
Just
in that time. And so I'm wondering, like, it was the same Bang, but was it manipulated differently based on the...
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same sound. It's mixed a little different here and there. But the sound is exactly the same. It's one sound, and that's it. That's the sound. It's called Bang. And that's it. It's the sound. Obviously, in some scenes, it's a little louder, and then the first Bang, for example, it's louder than the rest. And when they are in the dinner scene, for example, it's really loud. Also,
it gets louder. It seems.
Louder. Yeah.
Never fails to startle, no matter how many
exactly,
times you see the film.
Yeah, it's and what I really like about the scene in the studio is how she reacts to the sound. It's very visceral her reaction when she hears like, okay, this is the sound. She's very moved, and I really like that.
Yes. I thought maybe we could just talk about some other scenes, too. So there's I believe it's the second scene, which is the car alarm, almost the car alarm symphony.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really interesting scene because it doesn't seem to be precipitated by anything in the narrative. There's no sound that's triggering the alarms. There's no one trying to break into a car. And I was wondering how you thought about that, that particular scene and what you were going for.
Well, the way that I work in the movie is, was like, when I started working, they were filming the movie. They were about to start to film the movie. So I didn't have a lot of time to talk with the director about a lot of details. So what I did basically was I used the script like a recipe, because the script had had a lot of very specific sound notes, like a lot of sound descriptions. What is going to sound when, what kind of sound, if it's near, it's far away, a lot of different description about textures of the sound. So I was like, okay, I can talk to the director because he's doing some work, and so I will use that. And that's what I did. And how I started working on the movie was during the filming, because I started receiving the dailies, and I saw the shots, and I saw that, okay, I have this scene, and I have two shots. One shot is 15 minutes, the other is 10 minutes. And there is no coverage, that's it. We have two shots, and that's, so I thought, okay, if we have only two shots, and they are super long, I don't think they're gonna edit like a lot. It's gonna be it. So I decided to start working during filming, like doing ambiences for these shots and sending the ambiences for to the editor, so they can start to hear like real ambiences, very layered during the editing. So for that scene in particular, that scene was very different in the script, because in the script...
I have it here.
Yeah, you can read it. In the script, there was... Can you read it, please?
Sure. So we were just talking about... Javier gave this to me beforehand, but this is what the script originally was. Before dawn, an outdoor parking lot is almost full. The stillness is broken by the rumble of thunder, which doesn't happen in the film. Silence resumes. The camera starts to move. There's a sound in the air, a mixture of wind and a strange group of insects. Were there insects? Did the insects make it? I didn't think the insects didn't make it either. After a while, the camera stops moving. There's the sound of a man clearing his throat. Didn't make it either. But that is a bit unnatural. A second clap of thunder reverberates through the sky. Suddenly, a car alarm goes off. The horn is honking. The lights are blinking. It triggers five other cars, and they are blowing different tones, and as if the tempo were performed by drunken musicians. So
yeah, so I think that his first idea was yeah, to make the sound to give like a reason for that sound, right? But then he doesn't like that, and he started to think more about the ambiguity of if it is real, it's not real, and you can feel that in Jessica's that she's trying to think, am I crazy? This is happening or not? Why is it happening? There is like a supernatural element that he developed during the editing. At the beginning, there was obviously was there, but it was kind of different. The idea of the whole movie was more tied to the history of Colombia, to the history of terrorism in Colombia. The bank has had like more ties to that. And now the only tie to that is in the tire explosion scene with the bus, with the tire of the bus. That's the moment when you see someone like reacting very violently, and he starts running on the street because he remembers that kind of explosions happening in the 70s and 80s when there was a lot of terrorism in the country. And in the script that I read, that was like the central idea, that like these kind of explosions were really tied to the history of Colombia. And then during the editing, he started to change his mind and trying to do it in a more metaphysical way, yeah. Not so realistic and not so historical. It's there. That's what I like about the movie, because it explores a lot of different ideas. Mm-hmm. It explores the idea that this sound is coming from a distant past, and basically it's echoing through the whole history of the planet and obviously of Colombia. So I like this idea that you are part of a history, even if you don't know that history. You know, you are like, she's kind of suffering the effects of this history that she doesn't even know. That's one of my the ideas that I really like. Also, that reality is very subjective, and how you experience reality through your senses is very personal. And we lived in a common experience, but we are having like different perceptions of that experience all the time. And I really love that also. There is a lot of different ideas, and I think that he wanted to make the movie more ambiguous so you can think about different things.
Yeah. So this is leading off our series, year-long series on panic, and mm-hmm. it's the one like moment that is the way we would normally render or expect to panic to manifest, him running down the street in a kind of terror, and then the Jessica character herself stops in the middle of the street and seems startled by the either the bus tire blowout and or him running away.
Exactly. And in the first draft of the movie, of the script that I read, he incorporated the backstory of Hernan, of old Hernan. Uh-huh. And that story was very tied to the terrorism in Colombia in the 70s and 80s. It was more of a political movie, and then he didn't develop that and make it more metaphysical and different. And I think more open to different ideas, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, you mentioned the whole question of the objective versus the subjective sound. Yeah, it seems to me that gets thematized in the movie, and our sort of position as an audience, I mean, it is a sort of a mystery. If it's a genre movie, it seems to me it's a sort of a mystery movie. And the very question of, well, what are we hearing? Are we hearing Jessica's subjective perspective? That would mm-hmm. be a first question. And then are we hearing what's inside her head? Or is this some sound that is somehow external that only she can hear? And then I think, as you mentioned, that the moment in the restaurant, that scene seems to me make things definitive. It's a kind of break where, like, okay, we can hear it, she can hear it, and nobody else can hear it. And it seems to be a turn, a sort of turn in the movie. But this idea of the inside or outside the head, I was thinking of some other sort of binaries or dichotomies that seem to be working through the film and that work through a lot of Apeacha Pong's film, like the city versus the country. And I'm thinking mm-hmm. about how you thought about the different soundscapes for those kinds of opposites, the inside her head or outside her head, or even with the jazz musicians, the music versus the ambient sound versus the bang, how you were thinking about trying to draw out some of the differences or make them starker, or like between Bogota and the countryside. And then I was also thinking about the question of depth seems to figure in the movie a lot too.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about, of course, depth in the earth, but there's also the question of deep time that comes throughout the movie that's being played with. And so let's just take the scene in the tunnel, for instance, which is, I think, one of the most extraordinary in terms of the sound work and the scene in the tunnel. Can you tell us a little bit about that, how you were imagining that?
Basically, like I told you before, we try to generate like a lot of different contrast. And he really liked to do that because you can read in the script that whenever it was like a scene in the city, in Bogota, like in the streets, he described a lot of the sounds around her, like sirens, cars. So I was like, ah, okay, he wants a really loud city. And that's what we did basically, to generate a lot of contrast. Because there is also this question about how there are some sounds that we don't hear anymore, like the traffic. Traffic is so internalized, and we are so trained to filter the sound of traffic that we don't hear it anymore. So he really wanted to make it like foreground, so whenever it's traffic, it's kind of loud, you can hear it. It's not a natural sound, so we tried to push it a lot. And basically, yeah, it was trying to generate a deep contrast between that and the nature sounds. Also, when Hernan says that he really don't want to hear nothing anymore, so that's the sound. It became like it has details, but it's basically the same sounds, like crickets, the water, the howling monkeys, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So that was the idea behind that also. And for the tunnel, yeah, the tunnel, the idea was to make it sound, to give it a lot of detail, because there is, I don't know, that scene to me, it's like a human invasion. That was I thought about it. You can see like the human impulse to discover, to try, but it's a lot of machinery, and so the idea was to make it sound kind of violent. There is a lot of very big metallic sounds in the background. So there is, yeah, this,
like, it's a violation of the
yeah, the that, that was my idea. That's what I thought, because yeah, it's this human impulse, you know, to try to discover something. And so I tried to, yeah, we put a lot of details into the machinery and a lot of very big metallic sounds. And that was what I was thinking about, like this human impulse that can be very violent.
Yeah. Another scene I was thinking about is the scene where the young Hernan makes a mixtape. He's made out of, sounds like he's made out of the bang, his own, I don't know, electronic or punk music that she's touched by. And we all want to hear it. Like he refuses to let us hear that. And it reminded me of, kind of seemed to echo when she's showing her sisters the pictures in the hospital. I'm like, he's not going to cut in and show us what they're looking at. So I'm wondering, was that scene with the headphones, was there any discussion of us as an audience being able to hear that, or was that always?
No, it was as it did. Yeah, he doesn't like to discuss a lot. He's like, okay, this is it. This is what we're doing.
He's teasing us. That's the script.
He's in the script, there are some things that make some scenes more clear. That's very interesting. For example, in that scene in particular, when she's hearing to the mixtape, he describes what she's feeling, that she don't like what she's hearing, or he's describing some details that she can't hear. There is some notes for the actor also that are more descriptive of what of what the character is thinking. But I don't know. I think that he really likes to make everything like very open to interpretation. I think that that's his thing. Yes. He really like that, and to me that's very interesting because, yeah, you can think in. It's a movie that makes you think about a lot of different ideas, and what I think about the movie, it's gonna be completely different from what you think, perhaps, or you can think of a different thing. And that, to me, is very interesting because you can have like a very rich dialogue about around the movie, you know?
Right.
I really love that. He's like that. It's okay, this is it. And there is no coverage. He didn't film any other shots. The shots that you see in the movie, that's all the material. Wow. That's it.
So time for one more? So let's see. Well, I guess I'll just ask this one. The scene where Jessica and Agnes are sitting on the park bench in the public square, the silent dog is, by the way, I don't think we ever hear dogs, do we?
No.
No, we never hear dogs. It's interesting. So they're sitting there, they're eating, they're chatting, they're drinking, and she remarks to Agnes, "Do you hear the sound of the animal bells?" And Agnes says, "Yes." Do we hear the animal bells? Because here again, I'm like, am I going crazy? Because they can both hear it, and now the audience can't hear it, right?
Yeah.
I think that sort of was playful.
Yeah, super playful. The movie is playful in a lot of ways. Well, the end. It's crazy. The
yes.
first time that I saw the end.
Yes, yes.
When I was reading the script the first time, it was okay. And then we see a spaceship. Okay.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yes, exactly.
That's unexpected. But I really like that. It's because, yeah, he plays a lot with the idea is she hallucinating or not?
Right.
Also, when in the dinner scene, when his sister says, "Oh, I was waiting for the call of this dentist, this
yeah.
doctor, but he died." And no, it's not dead.
Right.
So he plays a lot with the idea that is she hallucinating or not? Is this real or not? But I like that. Yeah, like I told you, I think that he really likes to make everything like very open to different interpretations, and he really liked in all of his movies, right? He really liked to do like strange things seems natural, like I don't know in his most famous movie like Uncle Boomy, suddenly the characters are like talking and suddenly, oh, a ghost is there. And
yeah.
Nobody reacts. It's
right.
like, it's there, oh, hi. They
right.
start talking with the ghost and that's it. He really likes to do that, to make the extraordinary very natural, very ordinary. I think that he really, what I really like about all of his films is this idea that all of the time we are in the middle of very extraordinary things, but perhaps sometimes we lose we lose touch with that kind of things, and we live in a very material world, and we don't connect with different ideas. And I think that he explores a lot of that. In his movies, that this very weird or supernatural things happens in a very natural way.
Yes.
And I think that his idea of the world is more complex than perhaps some other people. And he really likes this idea that perhaps the world is richer than we respect or we know. I don't know that perhaps we are close to a different kind of reality. I think that he really likes to think in that way, in a, I don't know, if spiritual way. I didn't talk about him about that, but I really like that about his all of his films, that you can sense that there is a different reality there. Mm-hmm.
Co-present.
That perhaps the characters, or we as a society, I don't know, we are like not very present to that kind of thing. I think that he really likes that idea. Yeah.
Well, I have other questions, but I don't want to be greedy. So time to have the audience ask some questions to Javier.
I was wondering about when you got the dailies and they had, I guess, the sound was synced to the video. Mm-hmm. And what do they provide? Is it like a stereo mix? Or, I mean, obviously there's, throughout the movie, there's different places where the soundstage is very enveloping and sometimes it's very forward. And I'm curious how you go from like whatever they send you to the final product that is like the Dolby Atmos kind of experience.
Yeah, the production sound mixer works a lot in stereo. He really likes, because this movie had a lot of musical elements or sound elements. He recorded the dialogue and also used some stereo mic. And in some scenes, he even used a surround setup. You know, he knew that the movie was gonna mix in Dolby Atmos. So in some sequences, he used a lot of mics all around the location. Even he put some mics very high in some locations. So we had a lot of material, because I talked to him just before the film started. And I was like, okay, we need everything that you can give me. You know? So put microphones everywhere and record all the wild ambience that you can. And he was really into that, and he recorded a lot of all of the ambiences that you hear in the movie. He recorded it in the real locations, a lot of things. And then when you're editing, you start to put different layers, thinking in the space. Okay, for example, when they are in the cafeteria, for example, the director really wanted that cafeteria to sound very alive. So we recorded voices for all the different tables, and we recorded a lot of the footsteps of the people that are moving around. Also, we put some very muted music, like a band rehearsal there, and then we recorded like a feminist demonstration, like a feminist protest, and that was like very, very far away in the mix. We put all of these elements thinking in the space, okay, so we can move these elements in the space to create the soundstage. The sound image of the movie in the room. So whenever you hear an ambience, you are hearing, I don't know, from 10 to 20 layers or more, perhaps. In that scene in particular, way, way more, because we had a lot of different elements. But in a regular ambience, you have a lot of different elements, because you have to put those elements in different parts of the room to make it like really big. Yeah. I don't know.
So I have a question. That scene almost at the end where the two of them are sitting inside his house, it's the most incredible sequence where, you know, we begin quietly and then it just builds and builds and builds. Yeah. And then by the time he touches her and says this bit about, you know, he's a hard drive and mm-hmm. she's this antenna. And then the ambience continues to build, and the rain, and you know, and then we hear those voices outside. And so it's like this crescendo of history, of memory, of so many things. But I caught this phrase and it struck me because it wasn't translated. And it was like somebody telling a story about him. Uh-huh. And it says, algo sobre un hombre que le toca, cuando toca a la persona, inmediatamente le transmite los pensamientos. You know, something like mm-hmm. that. So like the man touches the person and then we hear their thoughts. And so it was just this kind of layering of all these different stories, and I was really curious. And then because it's not translated, I thought, well, of course, it's just left out there. But it's so specific, you know, because we're seeing him actually being that transmitter, right? Or her being that transmitter.
Yeah, that scene in particular was about he transmitting to her his memories, and also transmitting like all of the history. He made a lot of different versions. While I was doing the whole movie, like 2 hours of movie, they were making only that 20 minutes by the end, and it was really cool because they were sending me weekly an update. So I was hearing what they were trying to do, what they were changing. Sometimes they asked me for some sounds. I recorded a lot of different sounds. And the idea, was to include his particular, very particular memories about his personal history, and the humankind history is a kind of thing. And yeah, that's why you can, but all is filtered through him, because when he's scaling the fish, he's telling the story of this guy that some guys punch him and they're stealing his food, and then you can hear that in the mm-hmm. scene replaying. So everything is filtered by his memory. So yeah, that was the idea, and it was very different. And in the script, you could hear a lot of dialogue between him and his son, for example. He has a son, and you can hear a lot of dialogue between them. It was a lot of trial and error and trying to find something there. And he tried a lot of different things. We recorded a lot of dialogue for that scene, and he was trying different things. We recorded a lot of voices with actors. I even recorded some things because he wanted like Spanish voices in Spanish, so I recorded a lot of things that he never used. He was trying to. But the idea is that she's receiving his personal history and also a lot of different memories through history till she hears the spaceship, basically. Yeah,
the touch seems important, if I can just quickly add, because what I noticed in this last time was that I had never caught before is when they're in the studio with the young Hernan, she stops him.
Yeah.
She puts her hand on him. That's signals to him that that's the sound. And then that touching comes back at the end of the film, too.
Yeah, that when she touches his hand, it's really cool. And I really like how they did this transition from the wind to the sound of the sea, and this sound that it's very similar to a radio tuning, you know, but with natural sound. I really love that. That's really cool. That's very great. They did that, like, I worked in the movie like for 4 months doing the whole movie, and they were working on that scene all along. Yeah.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.